Welcome to Manager Tools. Case Study Interviews, Part 4. Here we go. Today's cast answers these questions. What is a case study interview? What kinds of questions are there in case study interviews? How can I prepare for a case study interview? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
If you've not already, we'd encourage you to register for an account on the Manager Tools website. It's completely free and will give us the ability to speak to you directly about what matters most to you. You'll be signing up for our weekly newsletters and bi-weekly conference announcements, and we'll be on the list to receive notifications about upcoming events in your area. We don't want to overwhelm you with tons of uninteresting information, so help us target our reach out to what matters most to you.
Okay, Mark, so last week we talked about case interviews and what they are and kind of basic ideas around that, and today we're going to talk about what's the phased approach of going through a case interview?
Right. Lucky for us, just like behavioral interviewing, there's a basic approach to handling all case interview questions. What you do, step one, is you form an initial idea, hypothesis, a way to approach it. I think the problem is going to be here and not there. Okay. Then you apply a logical argument to that, basically a structure or a framework, which we'll talk about. Then you combine the idea and the argument or the framework, and you do an analysis of what the framework suggests about your idea to determine whether or not your idea is right. And it's completely okay if your idea is not right, by the way, because your framework shows you it's not right. But you go through some iterations to find out which idea would be supported by the data you have, that and the data is what you're analyzing within the argument. You do some analysis, and then you make a presentation. I recommend you keep this product line and cut costs here, and here's why. Data point A or supporting point A, supporting point B, supporting port C, supporting port D. Again, I recommend you invest in this product line and make it profitable. Don't sell it. Okay, that's the four steps. So what you do, you create that initial idea. And again, it's one that may be right. It's good to get it correct, guys. And in many cases, I'll give you an example of one. It's we can increase your chances of being correct because it's simple. But frankly, it's okay if your initial idea is wrong, because your analysis will show you that it's wrong, and you won't get dinged for having the wrong initial idea. You would get dinged for having the right initial idea and then cherry-picking data to support that. That would be bad. So it's not, as I think I said before, it's not about getting the right answer as much as it is proving that you have the skills to get that right answer over and over and over again, and the skills are primarily in the analysis and in the framework you choose. And by the way, if your first idea is wrong and you're drilling down, you're going to be able to show that you have disproven what your first idea was, which is important if you're in a meeting and the guy says, I don't think you're right about that. I think this is true. So actually, no, I looked at that and here are the things that support the idea that that initial hypothesis, which by the way, Bob, is totally reasonable. That was one of the things I considered. But if you look at this data here, all of these data suggest that that is not, in fact, true. And now suddenly you have one more convert in the room when you're making your presentation. And if your first idea is wrong, your second idea is that much more likely to be right because there's one less wrong answer to choose from. And guys, you can absolutely survive just fine in a candidate-led case interview if your first idea is shown not to be the right lever that you need for a solution you're shooting for. As you do more and more cases, you're going to get better and better at forming your initial idea. So look, let's give you some confidence here. Here's the question. We're losing $100 million annually in this product line. Why? And what should we do? Okay. You probably can already figure out that this problem, the analysis of this, has two possible initial ideas. Again, I'm going to say it again. We're losing $100 million annually in this particular product line. Why and what should we do?
Yeah, so stop the tape. And of course, I'm old. That's why I say stop the tape.
Okay,
I think that's good. Mark said there's two
somewhat obvious things you could think about here. Just figure out those out. See whether you're right or not.
I will tell you, one of the lessons I learned in my life, and I see it on people's faces all the time, is this sense that as managing particularly, which is it's sad, and that's why there's manager tools, but it's this feeling that other people know something I don't know. There's some secret knowledge out there that guy, she knows, she's good, and I don't know. Nobody taught me that, but she went to the right school, or she has the right background, or her mom was an entrepreneur, and she sat at her knee and learned all that stuff, whatever. No, I mean, one of the biggest detriments to the kinds of decision-making you'll do for the rest of your life is the idea that there is a right answer. And then second to that, that somebody else has it. That feeling you have of not knowing, everyone has that. Everyone does. Now, look, if you've been a consultant for 10 years, you know how to approach this, but they don't know what the right answer is. They don't. So even if you're not a consultant, if you trust yourself and you stop worrying right now, I know what you're doing. OMG, what should I tell them to do? That's a pretty big decision. You'll soon figure out if you just trust yourself. It's like that movie Willow. I quote it all the time. I just love that movie. Starring Val Kilmer. You're soon going to figure out that your initial idea is pretty straightforward. If you're losing money in anything, either your revenue isn't high enough or your costs are too high. That's it. It's either a revenue problem or a cost problem. Now, you might think, no, it can't be that.
Can't be that easy.
But it is. And in fact, we don't have time to go through them in this cast. We're just giving you a high-level overview. But there are a number of analytical frameworks for different business problems that we're going to share with you in the years to come. I know somebody just said, years? I'm like, no, sorry, guys. We have a long lead time, and that's part of the reason why the casts are free. There are a number of frameworks. There's a profitability framework, okay? There's an acquisition framework as well. And yeah, you don't know that stuff, but once you learn it, it's in your back pocket. And then there are people, guys, who know the framework and can't apply it as well as some of you can because they're either not smart enough or they can't communicate it about it or they get bogged down in details and so on. So in this particular example, guys, you either have a cost problem or a revenue problem. And if that sounds overly simple to you, it's an important lesson for you because many case studies boil down to cost or revenues. And guys, a little more help on the way. Trust yourself here. Assume you're a superstar at this. You're thinking costs or revenues, okay? Ask yourself, just trust yourself for a minute. Which one of the two is it more likely to be, all things being equal, which they never are, if you took 1,000 cases and you did an analysis? Is it a question of revenue or is it a question of costs? And hopefully you came up with cost. It's not always right, but it's more likely to be right in this case that if you have a profitability problem, you have a cost problem. I want to go back and I want to say something else. The interviewer is not terribly concerned that you chose the wrong initial idea as long as you're in the ballpark and know in this particular question, you don't know it's revenues or costs, right? I mean, even some people in high school know. Well, I don't know. I got revenues and costs, okay? She knows, the interviewer knows, that your issue tree, your framework and analysis won't bear out we have a cost problem here if the data that she's going to give you, if you ask for the right data to analyze it, doesn't bear that out. So it doesn't matter. I mean, you could flip a coin and say every other case interview that's profitability-based, you could say cost in one, revenue in another. Pretty soon you'll figure it out. And again, if your analysis is good and your initial hypothesis is reasonable and you don't have time to get to the final answer, first of all, case interviews are notorious for being open-ended on time. So if it takes you 4 hours or it took somebody else 3 hours because they guessed the right one, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter at all. They may get a low score, you may get a high score because you're so smooth about how you do it and you present it so well. But going back to the point I made, the reason why slightly more likely you have a cost problem is the market gives you, assuming there's competition, which generally speaking, that's true, the market gives you pricing guidance. If your pricing seems reasonable, and again, it may not be, then costs are probably the issue in a profitability case. And the other thing is, costs are completely controlled by you. And again, this is only a probably. I'm giving you a rule of thumb that you can use to say, all things being equal, more often than not, if I'm presented with a profitability problem, the framework would suggest that it's a little bit more likely to be costs. So I'll pick that one first. It just increases my chances a little bit. On the other hand, I don't mind if I'm wrong, because if the cost analysis doesn't bear that out, I'll go all the way back up to the top branch of my little tree that I created and say, okay, it's not cost, it's got to be revenue. That's it. Okay. So you've established initial idea. In this case, we're going to assume it's costs, right? You're going to test it using a framework. By the way, these are often called issue trees, because if you were to take one, if I put a hypothesis, let's say, take a piece of paper, A4 or 8.5 by 11, turn it landscape mode, not portrait, and over on the left side, put down profitability, and then put two branches going to the right, but not very far, and one says revenue, one says cost. And then analyze each one of those. What kind of revenues are we talking about? You've got price per unit, and we've got number of units sold, which is overly simplified because there may be a number of products within the product line, okay? And then on the cost side, you've got cost per unit and number of units sold, and cost per unit, just off the top of my head, guys, it has fixed costs and variable costs. Don't be worried if you don't know that. If you're 25 years old and you've never had a business class, you're an engineer, fine. You're a developer, you don't know that. You will. But they call them issue trees because if you were to take that landscape piece of paper that is getting, that has branches on it, more and more branches as you move further right, if you rotate it 90 degrees counterclockwise, it looks like a tree. That's why they call it issue tree. There's an awful lot of terms of art in business that essentially allow those people in that area of business to send a message that you're not one of us. But really, it's just a framework or a logical argument to analyze, is it cost or is it revenue? That's all it is. Call it whatever you like. It does look like a tree, but when people say issue tree, they're like, oh God, I don't know what that is. Nah. Probably if you were given this problem in a classroom and weren't told you were doing a consulting problem, you could probably say, well, it's one of these two things, and here are the things that go into those two things, so I need to analyze these five things. So the logical argument basically says, okay, I got a profitability problem. I need to decide which of the two it's in. I've got some sub areas in each of those two. I got to look at each of the areas that support the issue of cost or the issue of revenue and see whether or not I've got a problem there. And it may be that your first layer of analysis doesn't show you anything, that it appears copacetic because the averages that you're getting from the interviewer, and I'll come back to how you get those in a minute, appear fine. But, you know, if you have five product lines and three of them are making a lot of money and two are losing a lot of money, it appears the product line is losing a lot. The product lines that all form together in this aggregation of products that we call TVs, maybe, it appears that it's losing money, but that doesn't mean every product line is losing a lot of money. Maybe only the brand newest TV is losing a lot of money because you have a price war going on or whatever else. So you may have to drill down further into individual product lines to see it. And there might be two or three or four or five nodes at one level and three to four sub nodes at each one of those. And you might start thinking, wow, Mark, there might be 20 nodes I'd need to look at. Yes, there might be. But analyzing each node is basically the same. You get the data, we'll talk about that again in a second, and you look at it, and it's a fairly straightforward analysis. They're not going to give you 100 pages of spreadsheets. They're not. Okay. The whole point of a candidate-led case is you're going to analyze it, and then you're going to ask about various things in order to avoid boiling the ocean and saying, give them all the cost and revenue data, I'll stack it up here on the desk and I'll work on it for a month. You're not gonna have that much time. Now, let's continue the example we mentioned, the profitability problem. So it actually does have a framework called the profitability framework. And for the record, guys, licensees will be able to look at their show notes here and see a profitability framework really simply. Profit is at the left of the logical argument. The only two branches to the right are revenue and cost. Revenue branches, as I mentioned, price per unit and units, number of units sold. Cost branches into cost per unit, number of units sold. Cost further branches, as I said, fixed and variable. Okay. What happens next in our high-level example here is critical to understanding candidate-led cases. Let's say you've got a profitability problem. You've suggested your initial idea is you have a cost problem. You don't know it yet, and you're not worried about being wrong. Hey, guys, high C's. I love you. You guys who are perfectionists. This is where you struggle. You don't want to come up with the wrong hypothesis. You guys who are high C's and engineers and perfectionists and analysts and so on and like dotting your I's and crossing your T's, another way to think about this is an experiment. You're not worried about getting the wrong answer. Scientists love getting proof that their hypothesis is wrong. It's one less thing they have to check, provided they did a rigorous analysis and have hived off the things that aren't impacted by this particular hypothesis. Okay, so don't worry about being wrong. I just guessed. I said, okay, we'll do a cost. Again, flip a coin. That means, according to the framework that we mentioned, you either have a unit sold problem or you have a cost per unit problem. But again, you don't have any data to know which it is. But the interviewer does. This is when you have to decide what to ask for. You'll say something like, this could be a cost per unit problem. Do we have any information on cost per unit? And you'll get one of two answers. Actually, we do. Here you go. And that's a good sign, actually, because they don't have all the data for every branch, every node of your framework. They only have data for the things that are relevant, because again, they don't want you learning how to boil the ocean. If, in fact, you had decided you were going to do a revenue analysis, and again, this is just one of many different frameworks that you would learn about, and we'll teach you more in the years ahead. If you had said, I think we have a revenue problem. Do we have any data on revenue, on types of units and prices? Actually, we don't. Okay. Cool. I just eliminated 50% of the potential problems here. That's not to say it's not going to be thorny when you get down to the details. You're going to have to know how to look at price data and cost data and so on. But again, if costs or units are not the problem, the interviewer will say something like, I don't have any data about that. Guys, this doesn't mean your initial idea and analysis thus far is wrong. It means that you're appropriately drilling down into your logical arguments, eliminating potential causes. Remember what I said earlier. If you get the right answer only because you cherry-pick three data points and you haven't analyzed all the other areas that it could or could not be because you didn't ask for data on that, that is the kiss of death. You will not get another interview from a company, even though you got the answer right. Because it proves that you can't reproduce that kind of work. Nobody has that level of business insight. If this were actual client work, you may have to look at 20 different ways to segment a particular product to maybe for units sold. You may have to look at geography and the type of product and the distribution channel, discounts that may be being offered, so on. The interviewer is attempting to simulate what you'll do for a client, not make you do all the work you would do over a 6-week client engagement. And by the way, if you're wondering, 5 of those weeks out of the 6 on that engagement might very well be spent collecting data on all the ways you could segment unit costs and then analyzing that data. You might think that any halfway decently run company would have that data readily available. And guys, you'd be wrong. Because available means I can look at it and analyze it. Now, do they have cost data? Do they have pricing data? Yes. Okay. Is it in a usable form? No. That's why there's such a cool thing among CEOs. I need a dashboard. I need a dashboard on my desktop that if I click on any of the metrics, I can drill down and find all the things and do an analysis from my computer. Typically, that is a great idea in theory, but the CEO shouldn't be doing that. And what's more, it's not possible. In a billion-dollar company, you couldn't drill down enough to find, aha, here's our problem right here. This sales rep is not pulling his weight in Tulsa. So if they had the data available in a usable form, they'd have looked at it and known the problem was, say, an increase in one component part price due to, well, let's just say it's a land war in Asia. Who knows what causes things? So your job would be to do that. And the interviewer has taken what amounts to the truly relevant pieces of data to help you find out when you've hit on something that's interesting, so you don't ask about revenue and they don't give you every bit of revenue data they could possibly have. So then again, it would take 4 or 5 hours. And if you spent 4 or 5 hours analyzing revenue, you wouldn't be wrong. And when you discovered that it wasn't a revenue problem, you could eliminate that as a problem and then you'd know it was a cost problem. That's often why consultants keep ungodly hours, because knowing the right question means then we have to gather all the data and we have to collate the data and we have to look at it and we have to parse it and so on. And for the record, guys, if you don't like case interviews, if you don't get excited about drilling down and figuring it out, you won't like being a consultant. Anyway, okay. In a belated effort to make a long story short, the analysis portion of the process after your initial hypothesis or idea, whatever, is the process of this drilling down through every branch of your tree, framework, whatever, attempting to either prove that a branch isn't relevant, it's not the cause of our profitability problem, or that it is relevant and it's driving the unwanted results or the issue we need to solve. You get through each part of the argument, again, by asking for data or information from the interviewer. Now, look, you are expected to be familiar enough with the form of business reports, financials, valuations, cash flow statements, those kinds of things. And many of you listening, full disclosure, no offense, this is true of me and Mike as well, don't know how to read a balance sheet, don't know how to read a P&L, and maybe even don't know how to do a pivot table. And that's okay, but those are opportunities for you to learn, okay? And basically all that stuff tells you, okay, your analysis tells you which areas indicate problems and which ones say, no, this is pretty copacetic over here. Once your analysis is done, and maybe you've proven your hypothesis, or in the first part of your analysis, you disprove your initial idea, and now you're going back up, and now you're going down the other branch, and now you've found where the problem is, you then present, okay? Typically, what that means is, in a case interview, or therefore in a strategic consulting role, or for that matter, any person presenting to a senior group of executives a recommendation or the end result of some analysis, it starts with a recommendation. We do not do analysis just so we can educate people on the analysis. You have to synthesize that analysis into a recommendation, okay? So you have a recommendation followed by some supporting arguments and then a restatement of your recommendation. For the record, guys, you do not, in a case interview or in speaking to senior executives, go through all the steps you went through in your analysis. I mean, when I say that, I'm sure Mike is like, oh, no, you couldn't do that to me, okay? You certainly don't tell a story about each step. I've told people this before, the worst email I think I ever got. I answered it and I helped the person, but Mark, I want to tell you a story.
Yeah, of course.
And I joke and I say, yeah, I want to shoot myself in the face.
Yeah. And please don't tell me the answer until the very end. I want to experience the whole process of listening to an hour and a half story, just guessing every step of the way what the bottom line is.
Yeah, because that's dramatic and that will make you really be leaning forward and somebody told me once the total dollars that are spent in an hour-long meeting at corporate headquarters of a CEO of $1 billion and 3 or 4 or 5 of her staff, you know, how much that is. If you couch it in terms of revenues of the firm, it's probably 6 figures. We're not paying you to give us a dramatic story.
Hey, y'all, if you don't like us admonishing you about this kind of stuff, just imagine what it must be like to be my mother. Because my mother, as Mark knows, tends to tell stories. And she absolutely knows bluff, bottom line up front. Because generally in our conversations, I say, Mom, after about 30 seconds of the story, I say, Mom, give me the bottom line up front. Then tell me the story. It's so funny.
Yeah. So look, guys, they're probably high Ds. They don't want to be told about the storms at sea that the ship went through. They want to know when the ship came in. So you make a recommendation, you support it with the key points from your analysis, and then you restate your recommendation. People love it. I mean, that's what I want. Don't tell me how long it took. If you impress me with how long it took, that costs me more money. If the client or interviewer wanted you to explicate a particular supporting point, your analysis has made you ready to do so, and you address it. Now, guys, we'll have more guidance on making recommendations to senior executives and different guidance, which you can safely assume applies to consulting jobs and therefore to case interviews, because case interviews are behavioral interviews for consulting jobs and senior analytical jobs, strategic decision-making jobs for businesses. And again, we'll have more in the years ahead about case interviews with examples. We really like it, and I've been wanting to do this for a long time, and I'm glad we're able to do it. To be clear, there are a lot of frameworks that you learn to think about how to analyze a business, even if you never become a consultant, even if you never get a case interview, which if you're interviewing internally in your company, you probably wouldn't get. Knowing those frameworks, knowing, for instance, the rule of 72, as an example, those things are good skills to have and is part of your professional development. And insofar as podcasting allows us to do it, over the years, we'll help you do it.
Excellent.
Folks, if you feel like there's more, there is, and we're doing our best. I don't know, we've got to be at three or four parts of this show right now. So
yeah, exactly.
So let me just summarize if I can. Guys, case interviews are a critical part of the interviewing world, even if they're only used for a very small portion of jobs. If you're going to go into an MBA program, knowing how to handle cases will give you a leg up on your fellow students. Or if you're smart, you won't worry about the leg up. You'll want to help them and you'll win points as a team player, which is a good thing.
Excellent. Thanks, my friend. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, partner.
All right, everyone. We'll see you next week.
So long.